A line expands into TV static. White letters appear. HBO, a circle inside the O. Shards of white fall into place to make words. HBO documentary films. Thorny shrubs quiver on a barren plain. Distant hills disappear into a blue haze. Sunlight reflects on the walls of an empty dining room. HBO documentary films presents. A white comforter is dotted with small black stains. A Loki Films production. The metal blind behind a mobility bed is in disarray in association with Gaptooth Films. A bathroom with peeling green paint. Executive produced by Heidi Ewing and Rachel Grady.
How did I get here? How did that happen?
An old-fashioned dentist chair. Edited by Toby Shimon.
Was it something unholy? Something circumspect? Something that was evil?
Director of photography, Justin Zweifach. A gynecology plinth with stirrups. In the bathroom, a dusty basin. Original music by Will Epstein, featuring music by Colleen.
I can't believe that we're the only ones.
A small yellow office with the chair pulled out from the desk. A vacant corridor, directed and produced by Hannah Olson.
Did you ever think we'd find out?
The sun sets blood red over a city in the desert. Baby God. Fade to black. Home video of a woman walking along a suburban sidewalk in a voluminous wedding dress.
In those days, in the 60s, it was get married, have kids. Everything's gonna go nice for the rest of your life.
Snaps from the wedding party. The bride serves cake. She is carried by the groom. On another occasion, they are photographed with a new car in a desert lay-by. The husband wears naval uniform.
Las Vegas was not nearly as busy as it is now.
Cars drive over the desert.
Not crowded. It was nice.
Roadside billboards advertise casinos, a suburban neighborhood under a mountain with green, yellow, and brick bungalows.
I was 22.
The woman lounges on a deck chair in a backyard. She waves.
All my friends were having babies right off the bat and everything, and we didn't have one.
Kathy Holm.
People would ask, when are you guys going to start your family, you know? But it wasn't easy to get pregnant. A lot of pressure. It wasn't just the pressure. I just wanted one. Wanted kids.
Young Kathy poses with her husband in his uniform. In the present day, she looks through a pile of photos.
Nobody had any solutions.
One shows a small women's hospital.
Until I went to Dr. Fortier.
A photo of the doctor, bald with glasses, with a child on his lap.
Dr. Fortier, he was listed in the phone book as a fertility specialist. He just told us to bring samples in and that he would do the insemination with my husband's sperm samples. I thought, well, it's worth a try, you know.
The hospital building has a wide flat roof. It is single story and cars are parked in rows out front. Footage through microscopes of sperm cells wriggling and bumping into each other. In black and white, a sperm cell reaches an egg. The fertilized egg compresses, then splits. Home video. A pregnant Kathy leaves a red Volkswagen Beetle and crosses a lawn. Kathy's husband reclines with a baby on his chest. Kathy walks beside a young girl.
And then over time, I would look at Wendy and I'd think, gee, you know, it's really funny that she doesn't really resemble her father's side of the family at all.
Kathy's husband holds Wendy and kisses her.
As she grew up, I thought, where'd she get all these brains? She didn't get them from me. And I didn't think her father was all that smart. I mean, he was like I was, average.
Moving uphill between suburban bungalows, Portland, Oregon. A lavender bush sways in the wind outside a yellow house. Bees explore the flowers. Inside, medals and patches hang in a frame on a white wall. Wendy Babst, born 1966.
I was a detective for almost 13 years. I retired from my job. I needed some more things to keep me busy. And so I thought, well, maybe I'll do some genealogy. I think every person thinks that when they retire.
She stands in the kitchen using her laptop.
So I bought an Ancestry.com kit. You know, you always see the commercials and people are having these great results.
Wendy scrolls through the Ancestry.com website.
I had a bunch of matches, which initially I thought were first cousins.
The site lists profiles under a tab, Close Family.
But I don't have any first cousins. When I noticed that I had half-sibling matches, I knew something wasn't right. The only name that I kept seeing was Fortier.
Moving through an extensive family tree with silhouetted male and female icons, Wendy blinks behind her glasses.
I knew I needed to talk to my mother.
A photo of Kathy and her husband with baby Wendy.
I said, I did a DNA test, and my dad's not my dad. And my dad was the fertility doctor that you were seeing in Las Vegas.
A photo of Dr. Fortier. Wendy and Kathy go through the pile of photos.
Do you think he would have ever gone for a donor?
No, I didn't even know. I didn't. Never even thought about it.
Did you know that people even did that?
No.
Yeah, I wondered if it...
I didn't. You know, because stuff like that wasn't really talked about. You know, it was probably kind of a new thing, even. But if it had been an option, I'm pretty sure we wouldn't have done it.
Kathy scrutinizes a family photo. At sunset, a car drives on a long road through Plains toward the lights and monuments of Las Vegas. The driver, an elderly man with sweeping white hair, watches the road through sunglasses. He has the roof down and he smokes a cigarillo. Dr. Frank Silver, employee of Dr. Fortier, he enters a bar. He smokes in the pink light of the bar. He shows a photo on his phone.
There's a normal ovary. This is an abnormal ovary. Yeah, that was really, as they say, a monster. Well, there's a tumor, but that's not what I wanted to show you. This is her again. She was showing me shoes. She's pretty cute. That's a uterus with the tubes in her. Ah, sunset on the Pacific, huh? What do you think of that? You know what she said? She said, thank you. You have changed my life.
He shows a photo taken mid-surgery. Wearing blue scrubs, he walks down a nondescript corridor.
I'm a gynecologist, and a gynecology kind of specialty was something that was a door opener in Las Vegas, because I would say that 70 to 75% of the population were females.
Behind the scenes shots of showgirls getting ready.
And they needed some kind of oversight by a female physician.
Dr. Silver sits at a desk.
Not a female physician, a female that treats, or a male that treats females, okay?
Dr. Harrison Scheld, employee of Dr. Fortier.
This banana should soon, any minute now, pop a big flower that looks like a hippopotamus's penis. It's a huge thing. It's a huge. And the petals of it, okay, are the banana fruits that we eat. Okay? So, once it does that, it dies. So this plant then dies, but it made a baby.
He walks across the yard to a greenhouse.
You have to understand, I'm an obstetrician. That's my job, to give life. Come on, let me show you some more things.
The number of OBGYNs here, which is my specialty, well, you could count on your hands. And so Dr. Fortier said, to heck with all you others, we'll start our own place.
Old photos and advertisements.
Quincy was the inceptor of Women's Hospital.
Original blueprints of the hospital. An advertisement reads, baby, 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 baby. A row of babies sleep on a table.
We were delivering thousands, thousands. I would say I delivered probably in excess of maybe close to 5,000 babies. It was such a great little center for females.
We treated conditions associated with infertility, not having any of the modalities we have today, especially genetics. So we didn't have any of that. There was no sperm bank. we had no way to know that you could freeze sperm, okay? Which meant we had to use fresh sperm. And in a medical school or a hospital, you could be a donor. It was more or less informal.
You know, I was a donor.
Dr. Silver.
When I was a medical student, we would sell our goods for $50 a sample. And they would pull the sperm and then inseminate these women.
How do you do it?
A syringe. You just use a syringe with a long needle on it, and you just put it into the cervix, actually. And it's 1, 2, 3, nothing to it, really.
Footage of cells moving.
Quincy was doing some fertility work, but it was unbeknownst to the patients. But in those days, they didn't even understand DNA then. If someone was fertilized out of that sperm sample, they would never be able to say who was the father of a baby.
An unborn baby sleeps in the womb. A newborn holds an adult's finger.
I grew up in that hospital, chasing with my father on his rounds. It was fun.
Quincy Fortier Jr., born 1953.
I had four older sisters and a little brother. My oldest sister was my mother's daughter. My mother had been married before to somebody else.
A photo of the Fortiers.
My father was a brilliant, brilliant man. He could look at your toenails and tell you your teeth were rotten, and he'd be right. He understood the human body. Women got pregnant when they went to him. Other doctors couldn't figure it out. He could. He knew what to do, or whatever needed to be done, which led him to using his own sperm.
How do you know that your father was doing this?
Because he told us.
But what did he say?
He just said that I'm just helping out.
Black and white helicopter footage of suburban sprawl. New houses are spaced evenly along treeless roads.
How many siblings do you think you have?
Hundreds. Plural. Yeah, lots and lots. My father was real busy.
The light of a computer screen reflects in Wendy's eyes.
How many siblings have you found?
Oh, at least 14.
Clicking through the profile photos of different men and women.
The first thing when I started contacting people was, can I see a picture? What do you look like? So I'm looking at all these features trying to say, well, what is common? I think I'm probably the only sibling that doesn't look like the other siblings that I've seen so far. I think everybody else has a pretty common nose. You know, I've seen some of my siblings on their family trees have listed him as their father. I'm not ready to do that.
Kathy opens a file of documents.
I have found half siblings that were born in the 1940s, the 70s, and in the 80s. Two that are almost the same age as my oldest son. And some as old as 70.
A photo of Wendy's family on a hiking trail.
I've emailed a couple of the people that I was matched to. And I said, you know, hello, I just received a close DNA match. Do you think I have figured it out? But it is a bit of a story. Would you be willing to talk message with me about it? He said, I'm very willing to talk about our close connection. If your story involves infertility, you are not alone. I may be his oldest child. He died in 2006 at the age of 93. Everything I can find that paints a picture of who he was is important to me. You know, I'm putting it together like a case, just like a case.
Wendy's hands turn a steering wheel.
I'm a digger, I'm an investigator at heart. I've been trained my whole life to go into cop mode.
Snow covers the banks of the road.
I started when I was 19 years old.
Tall trees flash by, reflected on the car windows.
I worked my way up and retired as a captain. Worked mostly major crimes investigations, lots of homicides and cold cases.
Television footage.
What we do in a case like this, if there is any inkling, we are better safe than sorry. We're going to do a full investigation. We're going to cover all our bases.
one of those people that I want to know. I want to solve the mystery and I want to know. And that's how I feel with this.
I thought a lot about whether or not he knew he would be caught. I think even he didn't foresee that for, you know, $69, you could send in a sample and connect yourself with people all over the world. I think he didn't see that coming.
Wendy's station wagon drives away from a snowy mountain. Glass containers are stacked in rows. Test tubes stand in a rack. A man looks through a microscope.
My name is Brad Golko. My PhD is in human evolutionary genomics. People tend to confuse what is unknown with what is unknowable. And so a lot of things, like parentage, was ultimately unknowable, right? You could do a blood test, maybe you could find out a little bit of information, but the idea that you could pin down with statistical certainty who was your parent was an unknowable. It turns out it wasn't unknowable, it was just unknown. So these genetic tests have now come to produce scientific answers on things that were previously thought not just unknown, but not fundamentally knowable. And in that way, they seem almost mystical.
A digital reconstruction of a double helix. Visualized data ripples on a screen. Dots go up and down on scales. Combinations of the letters A, C, G, and T flicker against a black background. Brad's gaze is held to one side of the camera. He blinks.
Well, my first sense, I think, was a sense of sinking.
He stands behind a laptop with a picture of Dr. Fortier.
I didn't know about Dr. Fortier until about 2 months ago. Fortier, is that how you pronounce it? I see, I actually don't know. My mom lives in Southern California, and in her housing complex randomly ran into somebody who was talking about Las Vegas. And it came up that I was born at a particular hospital, and she had heard about him using his own sperm. And my mom realized, wow, I was a fertility patient at that practice at that time. I later found out he was a personal friend of my father's. They served together in the Civil Air Patrol, and my dad really liked him and looked up to him.
A photo of Dr. Fortier in uniform with Air Patrol officers.
And Dr. Fortier did actually deliver me. He's on my birth certificate. So I decided to get my DNA sequenced, and my sisters came back 99.5% Ashkenazi Jew. And mine came back 51.2.
Brad's hands flip through old photos.
I always wondered about the blue eyes, though.
Hands hold faded black and white snapshots. Mike Otis, born 1949. He has a light gray beard.
Gosh, it was a couple of years ago. I was trying to find what tribe my grandmother came from.
Home video footage.
Most likely Native American.
A young Mike walks with his grandmother.
And I get this information back and look at it, and who are these 48 people?
A photo of Dr. Fortier looking directly into the camera. Footage of Mike as a blonde child.
When I was born, my mother still talks about how her sisters were upset. And how did she come out with a blonde-haired, blue-eyed child?
Mike walking with his mother.
Perhaps the doctors saw that she was married to imperfect selection, shall we say. Part Native American, had olive skin, dark hair. And he was going to give her a gift. Maybe I'm a gift.
Footage through a microscope of cells splitting. At dusk, suburban Las Vegas appears as a lake of sparkling gold under silhouetted mountains. Bright blocks of color represent DNA in an old science documentary. An arrow points to pink, eye color, green, blood type. orange skin color, a darker pink bone growth. Cut to a colorful neon sign of a cowboy. Blurred casino lights melt into microscope footage of cells. Rows of identical windows in an apartment building, some with the lights on.
I think there's a natural human drive to reproduce. And to reproduce as diversely and as fruitfully as possible. I can understand why somebody would have a primary motivation to use their own sperm and to see somebody who you feel like is attractive carrying your child. Simple, straightforward, and most people in a civilized society realize, well, you can't just do that. I feel like Dr. Fortier found a way to justify in his own mind, I imagine, found a way to justify in his own mind doing what he wanted to do that didn't violate his ethical norms too much, even if it pushed them pretty hard. And as being the result of that kind of a decision, I don't know. I think I'm still struggling with that. I don't know where I'll end up.
A plane comes in to land in the sunset. Las Vegas, Nevada. Wendy, a backpack slung over her shoulder, approaches a red building with columns. Inside, Wendy's hands clip a spool of film to a machine. She and two others sit at computers scrolling through microform copies of old documents. An identification form with a picture of Dr. Fortier.
Height, 5'10". Weight, 165. Blue eyes. The physician and his wife had 5 other children together before they divorced in the 1960s. He later adopted 2 more daughters.
An article in a newspaper carries the headline, Trial Begins in Fertility Lawsuit. Wendy rests her chin in her hand. The camera focuses on the words, Doctor misled her. We zoom in on a grainy photo of Dr. Fortier in old age. The article reads, the lawsuit alleges Craddock's son, Cameron, bears a striking resemblance to Fortier. Craddock is suing Fortier.
He's just saying that he mixed his sperm with her husband's and that, you know, it would help with the, quote, swim up. And that he'd done it before.
Another paragraph reads, I would never have agreed to it, she said. I'm going to have a baby by some man who's 65 years old and I'm 20. A headline, side settle insemination case. Above is a photo of Dr. Fortier leaving the courthouse.
He was impregnating people into his 70s.
Another headline, physician, license remains in good standing.
He never lost his license. He died in good standing. You know, he just was able to kind of get away with doing this, just paid the people off, and now they're not allowed to talk about it. I think they gave him the benefit of the doubt and just let him continue to practice.
Wendy's hands grip the steering wheel of her car.
You know, I know that there's got to be some influence from his genetics in me. I just want to know what that is.
The car passes tall palm trees and cars parked outside of bungalows. The bright sun reflects on the windshield.
I struggle with whether or not I think he was a good person. Do you want to say that your father was a monster? And what does that say about you?
A black and white photo of a teenage Dr. Fortier. Voice of Dr. Quincy Fortier.
I was born in Auburn, Massachusetts, September 16, 1912.
We moved there just before the First World War. I thought the war was on the other side of the lake, and we would hear the noises of the trains going at night, and we thought that that was the enemy advancing over the other side of the lake. We had three cows, and they were named Faith, Hope, and Charity. And Faith had one pregnancy, and then we could never get her pregnant again.
Young Dr. Fortier smiles outside a white clapboard house.
That's where I really got first interested in infertility.
A handwritten note in an exercise book reads signs of pregnancy and then a list. On another page is a small diagram with labels. Another note reads semen analysis, masturbation with indistinct. More scrawled notes and diagrams of female anatomy. A note reads, forceps, gentle, and is underlined. Television footage.
Dr. Quincy Fortier is a legend in Las Vegas medical circles. His private practice began in 1945. Fortier continued his fertility practice from a small office behind his home, even after passing his 90th birthday. In 1991, he was honored as Nevada's Physician of the Year, but the good doctor harbored dark secrets.
Mary Craddock wanted one of these, a baby. She and her husband tried and tried. Then, with the help of an infertility specialist, Mary says she finally got what she wanted, or so she thought. DNA tests show the doctor is actually the father.
Mary Craddock suing for at least $14 million.
Fortier, now 93 years old, finally closed his practice, put his multi-million dollar estate into a trust, and counted on his lawyers to keep a lid on the lawsuit.
There's a confidentiality agreement. It's reciprocal to both sides, all parties, and all lawyers.
Briefs written by Fortier's lawyer argue there is no Nevada law to prevent a doctor from doing something like this. Lawyers for the doctor are trying to settle the case and seal it, and for an obvious reason. They worry how many other cases might be lurking out there.
Dr. Fortier leaves the courtroom holding his daughter's arm.
He was an old man who had dedicated his entire life to helping people because he loved people. And to have one of his patients try to vilify him in the public light, it hurt him.
Voice of Nanette Fortier.
Back in those days, often any kind of agreement between a patient and himself was just a verbal agreement. You seal the deal with a handshake. I learned a different way of thinking about the press that time, and it has colored my thinking ever since. So this is difficult. But if you love somebody, you stand up for them. It's very, very least I could do for my dad.
What was your dad like as a dad?
He said that we saved him. He was going through a divorce at that time and was facing the loss of his six other children. We were two babies. He delivered us, took us home from the hospital, and the rest is history.
He adopted you at what age?
I think he would have been 55.
Photos of Nanette and her sister as kids smiling with Dr. Fortier.
Many times we were asked, was that your grandpa? No, it's her dad.
A dark-haired woman holds up a photo, Sonia Fortier.
I love that one.
In the photo, Dr. Fortier sits in a wheelchair.
Oh, this is a good one. It's high school graduation. You want to see?
Oh, my God.
Look, it's the American Institute of Hypnosis.
He used to hypnotize himself instead of taking anesthesia for, like...
Yeah, he didn't like pain medication because it fogged his mind. He circumcised himself. Howdy Mandito can do that. See, he donated a lot of money to a lot of different organizations, and of course, as soon as he did that, then he would become a member.
She flips through a stack of certificates.
He would see patients on a Sunday or a Saturday. Sometimes he'd see them at 5 or 6 in the morning.
He moved the practice into our home, which I know some people think that that's odd, but everybody's home life is different.
Home video footage of the girls playing piano.
My dad had a great love of music, and he had us take piano lessons, and sometimes we'd come home from school, and there would be patients in the living room, and we had to practice with an audience. And obviously some people might think it would be weird for an OBGYN to be treating his own daughters. But I was so grateful, not only because he was such a phenomenal doctor, but loved me too. You can't ask for anything better.
Nanette.
I knew how much people needed him. If they needed an emergency appendectomy, he was there for them. Needed a tooth pulled, he could do that. If you wanted to have a baby, you'd come to him.
Nanette's face remains off camera.
Did you know that he was doing this?
Doing what?
Using his own semen.
Once this came out, we'd have discussions, and I think that him using his own sperm to him was no different than using his own blood.
People were so desperate to have a child and really wanted it so badly, and you couldn't do it any other way then, of course. You know, if there was a way, a will and a way, then there it goes. And in his mind, he meant no harm.
Sperm cells vibrate under a microscope. A single sperm is sucked up into a pointed tube.
In his mind, he provided a biological necessity.
Footage of a baby from an ultrasound.
But then what went on after that was then another family. That was their family then, and he was removed from that.
Why didn't he tell patients that he was using his own sperm?
Sonia stares off.
I don't think that people had as much desire to know their backgrounds and things like that as they do now. I think people were happier with knowing that their family was their family.
A photo of the girls with Dr. Fortier sitting on the floor in front of a Christmas tree. A photo of Kathy Babst and baby Wendy also sitting by a Christmas tree.
I think the part that bothers me the most is the fact that I trusted him.
What do you think he did with your husband's sample?
Well, I know that the ones I read about online said that he said that he had mixed, you know, the donor thing, and I don't know.
She purses her lips, shaking her head.
I don't know. I do know that when I was in there in his office for my exam and whatever procedure he was doing, that he was in and out of the exam room. Two or three times, and at the time I did kind of wonder why he keeps going in and out, you know?
An old photo of Kathy sitting alone on a couch smiling.
I do feel like I have to protect my mom.
Wendy nods quickly, her eyes closed.
And I can't, and I couldn't. I wasn't there, and there's nothing I can do. And you know, my own selfishness probably kept me from protecting her even from this secret, because I had to know. I just had to know more once I found out.
She blinks.
Do you regret telling her?
I do feel guilty about telling her, because, you know, maybe it would be better if she just didn't know.
Video of Kathy holding baby Wendy.
And I just remember her starting to cry in the phone. And she said, he was older than my dad. All I could think of was, here is my sweet young mom wanting a baby and being in love with her husband, happy, and just wanting a baby. And this old man, because to someone who's 23 years old, a 53-year-old person is an old man, doing this to her.
She shakes her head. On video, Kathy's husband plays with Wendy.
My father has passed away, and I'm very glad he didn't know. It would have devastated him.
A photo of Wendy's father walking her down the aisle. Elsewhere, Mike Otis hunches over a desk.
Yep, came up. There we go. This is my real tree.
Ancestry.com.
A tree? But I think most of us that have a tree online have two trees. We have the tree of what we're supposed to be, and we have the tree of what we are, and usually what we are is hidden.
Male and female profiles fill a family tree. Mike clicks Quincy Ernest Fortier, then profile.
Windows 10 says we're one and the same person.
Dr. Fortier's profile shows lines to two spouses.
I wouldn't mind making it public except it, you know, after I tell my mother. That's the only thing.
Hands clasped together, one of Mike's thumbs scratches the other.
My mother, she was so afraid I was going to turn out like her first husband. The man I thought was my father.
Grainy footage of a man in a dimly lit room.
He could do these violent things.
The man smokes.
He left her when I was a little kid. I knew he was gone. I knew he wasn't coming back.
Toddler Mike wears red dungarees and drinks from a sippy cup.
So I inherited this very negative context of who I was by who she thought my father was.
The man gets into a white car.
I wasn't going to tell her initially. I had it in my mind not to tell her. And then I got thinking that, well, this, I don't have any right not to tell her. Who else can I share it with? You know, who do I go back with the longest? And that's my mother.
In the video, Mike's smiling mother follows her husband into the car. Sunset. Traffic moves in both directions against the backdrop of the Spring Mountains. In downtown Las Vegas, a box truck is covered with digital advertisements. Orange jets of water shoot up from a fountain. At a motel, the red doors to rooms stand in pairs. A single lamp illuminates a narrow apartment. Wendy sits with her back against the couch. Papers are spread out in front of her.
I can be distant from people. I'm quiet. I like to be to myself.
My tendency to be kind of cool and clinical did serve me very well in the work that I did. But
I worry that that coldness, you know, comes from him.
She leans in to scrutinize an image.
Because it's part of me. It's half of who I am.
The image is black and white of a cabin. A caption reads, Dr. Fortier's Pioche Hospital fell into disrepair. Wendy drives.
I think that there can be good in people that are doing bad things. I do think that. And, you know, he built this hospital when he was first starting out, being a rural doctor in an area where, you know, they desperately need doctors.
Wendy steers past simple, sporadic buildings high up on a hill. Cars are parked along a deserted main street, Pioche, Nevada. Wendy walks down steps beside a collapsed shed. She continues into a field and stands with her arms crossed in long grass. Behind her is a dilapidated white clapboard cabin. The vacant corridor. Wendy looks through open doors into adjoining rooms. She stands in a room with a single hospital bed. She spots the dusty basin and stained comforter. Technical equipment stands in the center of a room.
Stuff just kind of left behind.
She walks round an operatory light and what looks like a generator. Elsewhere is the gynecology plinth with stirrups.
Unbelievable. There are birth cards in here.
She studies a faded card.
Dr. Q.E. Fortier's Pioche Hospital, Pioche, Nevada. Makes me wonder how many cards he filled out for his own children.
Wendy pulls out files. She spreads files and ledgers out on a desk. A printed orange worksheet shows diagrams of the human anatomy. voice of Dr. Quincy Fortier.
Of course, I was the only doctor in the POH.
Hands flip through a file with more colored sheets. More files are stacked up.
I see I built the hospital that's here now. I did just about everything. From brain fungus down to toenails. I was the only one that was really doing infertility. Of course, in the early days, the doctors were our primary donors. So we collected our own specimens and did our own fertilizations.
Bottles of different sizes are lined up on shelves.
We had an awful lot of babies.
Pioche Hospital, seen from the front. Telephone wires run down like guy ropes into the long grass. Sand blows across the plains.
I was born in Pioche.
A portrait photo of Mike Otis as a child.
As a little kid, I was always a little odd. You know, I did needlepoint from the time I was three. I took apart a stuffed animal because it stopped working and actually sewed it back up with the kit for my needlepoint set. In the fourth grade, I get announced to the class that I'm a bastard. Do you know what that means? It means he doesn't have a father. He can never be a priest.
A photo of Mike and his classmates in gowns.
And I wanted so much to have a father. Everybody had a father. When I turned 18, I found him. And he was in a dive south of Market, alcoholic. I beat on the door and he said, "Who are you?" And I said, "I'm your son." I put my hand out. And that's how I met him. We talked for a while. Then he hit me up for $20. And I thought to myself, that's the most expensive $20 you ever got.
Passing through a mountain tunnel into sunlight. A man in a sun hat hikes up a gray trail beside an orange canyon. Brad Golko stands taking in the view.
I don't think it would be controversial to say 50% of a person's traits, behavior, predispositions were determined by a DNA.
A photo of a young man with curly hair.
My father is very socially adept. He's very comfortable with people, more traditionally extroverted. And I was never like that. From the time I was a kid, yeah, I was interested in chemistry, physics, and mathematics.
Drawings of double helixes in a child's exercise book.
And I've never been all that socially comfortable. I was kind of closed and egg-headed. I always felt like there was something wrong with me. People who don't share DNA with their parents and don't know they don't share DNA with their parents may feel that they're not just different, but somehow wrong.
A photo of a young Brad on a couch with his father. Brad hikes the trail alone.
You know, I believe in the biological and psychological manifestations of genetics. I'd like to see my half-siblings' personality traits and discuss life choices and see where we had similar and divergent perspectives and why.
He looks up, pointing toward a plane. Moving along a freeway, other roads snake in overhead, Concord, California. Mike drives, wearing sunglasses.
I'm anxious. I've gone over it and over it in my mind, probably for the better part of a year. My mom is 93 years old, and I still haven't nailed down exactly how I'm going to broach the subject with her.
He steers the car along a suburban street and pulls into a driveway. He walks around the side of the garage, passing bushes with bright flowers. One floor of the house, with a balcony, stands above the garage. The rest runs in an L shape. Cut to evening. A light shows through a blind. Morning. Sun glints through the leaves of a tree. Apricots grow on the branches. The brilliant green of the tree reflects on a window through which an elderly woman is visible. She stands at the sink, pitting apricots with a knife. Later, she sits in an armchair and holds up a portrait photo of herself as a young woman. Dorothy Otis.
You know, I couldn't sleep last night. I played Scrabble at 3 o'clock in the morning because I couldn't wrap my head around all this information. Then the first thing I woke up this morning, I was deciding certain things, what this and what that. First thing you think of, I didn't have sex with him.
Biggest story of my life, Mom, this thing with Quincy, and I so wanted to share it with you. And it was like having a whole different life and not being able to share it was eating me up.
Yeah. There's a lot of stuff in my life I don't remember, but that was strong. And I went in there because I didn't feel good. And I thought he was treating me for infection or something, I don't know. He put me on this table and examined me. And he says, you stay here and don't move. So I did what he said. Well, I was wondering if, you know, that I was out and was he, you know.
Yeah, I don't know that he had any history of forcing himself. He certainly did some unscrupulous things.
Was he trying to see how many people he could have on this earth before he left?
I don't know. I really don't know.
The photo of young Dorothy.
I wasn't even looking to have a baby. I wasn't wanting a baby at that time.
In another photo, baby Mike is slumped on a couch.
You know, my life may have been altogether different. I'd have gone back to school, but I probably would have gone farther, you know. Because I was young, I was only 20 years old when I got married. I had plenty of time to, you know, to redo. I had already saved money to go to school. I just wanted to get out of Pioche, Nevada.
Ornaments and vases are displayed around Dorothy's house.
Doctors in those days, you took them almost next to a priest, or like a priest, whatever they said, you would think they're a good doctor and they know what they're talking about. You just took them at their word.
What do you think about the doctor now, Dr. Ford?
I think that's a terrible thing to do to people. But I wouldn't have had Mike. Life takes, you know, I think God decides what's going to go on with you, you know.
Mike sits on a couch with his arms folded behind Dorothy. Later, she flips through a photo album, a picture of Dr. Fortier.
I keep looking at that picture, and it looks exactly like Mike did at that same age. You know, I'm relieved because I didn't think much of him as what we thought was his father.
My not father.
My not father, yeah.
Nighttime. The road in front of the car is only visible in the area covered by the headlights.
You have one unheard message.
Hi, Ms. Betts. I'm calling from the Clark County Courthouse. Some materials you requested just came in. You can pick them up this week during our business hours. Have a good day.
At the red-pillared courthouse building, a guard stands by the entrance. Wendy sits at a long table in a windowless room. She hunches over the documents. The camera focuses on the words, "Never discussed my father's sexual molestations."
It's a notarized affidavit of Connie Fortier. She allegedly recanted. That's pretty suspicious. It's being first duly sworn upon oath says, "My father passed away around 1950. My mother married Quincy E. Fortier, M.D. Dr. Fortier later adopted me. My stepfather sexually molested me on numerous occasions as a child, beginning at age 4 to 5 and continuing until around age 13. Dr. Fortier also sexually molested me during his many medical exams of me as a child. He would examine my vaginal area even if I only had a stomach ache. When growing up, our family never discussed my father's sexual molestations of his children. I avoided thinking about these sexual attacks. As a teenager, when I finally realized these attacks by my father were wrong, I felt even more guilt and feared telling anyone as I thought they would not believe me. I asked him why he had sexually molested me. He then said, 'I never raped you or were physically violent. I was always gentle and you were very relaxed and never got hurt.'"
A photo of Connie Fortier.
"I became pregnant at age 17. This was a shock as I was not having sexual relations. My stepfather would not allow an abortion and sent me to Minnesota to live in a home for unwed mothers. At that home, I arranged for my son to be adopted. I never attempted to have any contact with such son as I was ashamed of this involuntary and surprise conception. Around 1992, I was contacted by a Minnesota governmental agency to arrange contact with my then about 27-year-old son." Maybe John, I can't see, it's too blurry.
Wendy's hands grip the steering wheel. Snow covers the road and is kicked up as a blue truck passes. Walker, Minnesota. Wendy drives through snowy forest. She pulls up at a light brown cabin, parking behind a white 4x4. She puts her phone in her jacket pocket, then trudges toward the open garage.
"Hello?"
She continues around the side of the garage. A second cabin is behind, where a man is shoveling snow.
"Hello?"
"Hi."
"Hi." "I'm Wendy."
"Hi, Jonathan."
"Nice to meet
Good
you.
Good to meet you. Let's see if we can get the heat going."
They go into the cabin. Jonathan Stensland, born 1965. Wendy looks around a room with a log fire. She looks at a painting of a family. The kids perch on tree branches and a man stands below. A collection of spoons is displayed in glass cases on the wall. Crystal eggs stand on a table. John sets down a stack of binders. They flip through a photo album.
I wonder what you were doing that year. So that was 78, I think.
Oh my goodness, probably finishing middle school.
I'll have to take a load off for a second.
Through the window, branches of pine trees are dusted with snow.
"I always knew I was adopted, but you always answer this question when you're adopted. Well, do you know who your real parents are? Yeah, these are my real parents." And then you say that long enough and it's its own truth, it's true. But it's not all of the truth. And right. So you start to feel at a certain age that somehow it starts to feel like a lie.
Did your parents know any circumstances about you?
They knew that my mother was pretty young, but they didn't know anything about who the father was. And my mom was really thinking, go find out. Maybe you can find out. And so I wrote Lutheran Social Services with the intent of finding her. Then Connie wrote a letter to me.
What did she say? I mean, how did she say she conceived you with him?
She just said when she was at the getting the checkup from Quincy.
And she ended up pregnant.
And ended up pregnant.
And wasn't sexually active to that point.
And said she wasn't sexually active, so she couldn't have been. Nothing else worked in her mind. So...
Do you believe now that that's truly how you're conceived?
Yeah. And when Connie's mother found out, that was the end of their marriage. The divorce was... They got divorced right after.
Mm-hmm. Wendy watches John. She blinks.
So I suppose you could say, my grandmother divorced my grandfather, who is also my father.
She presses her fingernail into her thigh.
Did you ever meet Quincy?
I did. One of those trips out there went into... I went in the house, I could hear him whistling. And then I went through the side door because, you know, come on in. And he jumped up over the dryer. He was working on the dryer duct or something behind the dryer in, like, Mr. Furley nylon bib, kind of dark green nylon one piece. But he had the same arms I have, like, you know, where there's like a big forearm muscle. And Quincy had like Popeye arm. You know, it took me off guard. I on some level, I liked him. And on another level, I just like, I still kept the aperture really closed. But on this, just this level of like, just, there's his hands, you know, nothing about what his hands have done. There's his, you know, like just, the raw materials, it's like I like the raw materials.
What did you talk about?
Conversations with Quincy, he doesn't talk about anything that means anything. So it's hard to remember. I can remember a feeling of mendacity because you're trying to listen to somebody who's like a worm, you know, wiggling away. And so he had a kind of higher pitched voice, right? And at least when he was squirming. And he was like, well, Connie had a kind of, when Connie came in for her physical, I had just taken a semen sample on a cotton swab, but and then I did a swab of her, and then he switched, somehow I got the swab switched, and then when she left, he plays the drama, then when she left the checkup, he looked, then he realized the cotton swab was missing, you know, I must have used the wrong swab. It's like he was still selling himself this story, or trying to sell me the story that he had made a mistake. It was an accident, you know, that was an accident.
Wendy gapes.
He had the audacity to tell her, like, it could be a virgin birth. This guy of science.
She blinks and looks up.
So what, how did that make you feel? I hate to ask that question, but I mean, what went through your mind?
Family photos cover a wall.
I think that it was violence. I don't feel like the violence is carried by me, but I feel like the consciousness of the violence was born into me.
John walks out of the room. He smokes outside the cabin. He pushes snow off the porch with his galoshes. From afar, he walks back inside.
I'll tell you, I never did really confront Quincy. I don't think it would have been impossible for you to confront. Also, I really felt like it was Connie's thing to confront him. Like, I'm the sperm that's confronting him. It just, the drama didn't seem, I could never step into it. Like, the motivation for the character just didn't fit. But you realize, Jesus Christ, who are you?
Wendy scratches at a bandage on her thumb. The curtains sway. John holds a piece of paper in shaking hands. Letter from Connie to Fortier family.
I certainly have some impressions that I want to share. I asked him how he could take back the sexual abuse that he did to his children. I told him what he did was wrong and had tremendous lifetime negative effects. I asked him why he thought it was okay to sexually abuse his daughters. He said that there were studies from the manager's clinic that sexual relations with children and their father were not harmful.
John looks up. Wendy watches him.
On my way home, I deliberated on the conversation and feel that he was trying to manipulate once more so that he doesn't get in trouble for the sexual abuse that he committed when we were children. I'm so sorry for him. He is pathetic. He has always used money and his power and control to make us do things that no one wanted to do.
Snow blows past the window.
He needs to be held accountable, both on this earth and after death.
A view of the snow-capped woodland beyond the cabin. Quincy Fortier, Jr.
So my father was crazy. Also a pervert.
A photo of Dr. Fortier smiling in late middle age.
When my mother found out she started, she got right into it. But nobody told her for the longest time. He molested every one of my sisters, me and my little brother, and anybody else who happened to show up. He didn't care. He wanted to play. I think the happiest he ever made me was when he was laying in his coffin, dead. Then I felt safe. That's a long way to go.
Quincy nods and looks down, looking out over mountains covered with shrubs. In a small dining room, a framed photo of Dr. Fortier with young Nanette and Sonia stands on a cabinet. The words "Founder Women's Hospital" are printed under another, just of Dr. Fortier.
Sonia, was there any abuse in your house when you were growing up?
Sonia stares off.
It wasn't part of my life.
Her hands are clasped together on a table.
Do you think any part of the allegations were true?
I don't know.
Have you asked? You never asked your siblings?
No.
Did you ever ask your dad?
No.
Why not?
I don't want to know.
Do you think there was a part of you that was afraid it was true?
She nods, still looking away, then slightly shakes her head. The sky above Las Vegas is blue and hazy, obscuring the distant Spring Mountains. At the courthouse, Wendy turns over a picture of Dr. Fortier.
I want to change my nose. I don't like it, and now I feel like it, you know, I know where it comes from, and it just makes me not want to have my nose look this way.
A photo of Wendy as a police officer with two kids.
I spent more than half my life trying to, you know, hopefully protect children. And I put my family aside even a lot of times to do what I thought was pursuing justice. And so to find out, all those years I'm doing that, here's this man who's molesting his children, and he's my, you know, my biological father. And that's, you know, you can feel like you're fighting and stopping a lot of monsters, and then there's this monster that's, he's living in me.
The photo of Dr. Fortier looking directly into the camera. Other photos where he has a similar expression. Sunlight filters through a large tree. Wendy, in a blue summer dress, walks down a path in a cemetery. She stands in front of a plot. Subtitles. I don't understand what gave you the right to do what you did. I just don't understand any of it. A pyramid is visible at the far end of a quiet road. A white statue of a woman stands under a palm tree. Beneath the statue is a swimming pool.
He probably had the idea that he was doing a great service.
Dr. Frank Silver sits in his house.
Yeah, but you can't be a miracle worker and not let the individuals know what's going on. Means to end, my dear.
He shakes his head.
They don't justify the end. Bad means don't justify the end.
Dr. Silver's dining room is filled with flowers and ostentatious furniture. A cat and chihuahua sit at the threshold of the living room.
What if one of the kids from the times you donated in medical school came out of the woodwork?
Well, that can't happen. It can't happen. It's not supposed to ever happen. You know?
But what about with DNA?
Oh, yeah, but, well, again, it's not supposed to happen because it would be very difficult to identify. So I guess you could with DNA, yeah, it's possible.
And if they found you?
Oh, I'd love it. You know, what's wrong with that? Listen, another little me, how could you not love that?
Light ripples on the surface of a swimming pool. Dr. Harrison Shield, in a sun hat, paddles by wearing a foam support.
One day, one of my sons called me up and told me that I have a daughter. And I said, what do you mean? And he said, well, we did the genetics, and we did the DNA test, and you're the father of this person. About 2 weeks later, he calls me up again. He said, Dad, yeah, we got another one. And then it was about a month later, I think, I got, and then he calls again, and again, it's another.
His head bobs.
Another daughter. And now I know a 13.
At the side of the pool, he picks up a bottle and takes a swig.
When you think about all the times you donated in medical school, how many kids do you think you have?
I don't know.
His features sink. Suddenly, he smiles.
What can I tell you? I don't know. It's not a number that we can put our fingers on. Let's just put it that way.
A sign reads, Springs Preserve, 4-tier family, half-siblings. Mike Otis stands at a refreshments table talking to Brad Gulko. Mike uses his hands to describe a shape. Brad nods. Mike beams.
You know, I feel like I actually share a lot in common with you. I just so appreciate hearing about your background and the desire to work with your hands, but in technically oriented ways.
Yeah, likewise.
It feels like really familiar.
You went through the schooling that I didn't do. Gee, could
no,
I?
No, no, bad, no, 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 no.
A group of people, including Mike and Brad, sit around a table in a large room.
Which finger is longer? Is your index finger longer than your ring finger?
My ring finger's longer.
Yeah,
your ring
me
finger's
too.
Longer?
Well, yeah.
So, Brad, has this revelation changed your research or your mindset at all about your research?
It's like a puzzle that we all have pieces to.
Sure.
Brad's eyes move behind glasses. One of his hands squeezes the other on the table. The man next to him does the same.
So I found out a year and a half ago. Parents said it. They said we need to tell you something. They set us down like, okay, well, I'm not your dad because, you know, I'm infertile, blah blah blah. We used a donor. We don't know who it is. It's like great. And I guess the initial thing for me was just the whole like, you find out later in life, it's like I don't even know who I am. You know,
everything I know is wrong.
Exactly.
I got really sick for like a month and a half. I was like
as
sick.
A result. Like,
yeah, I was just totally distraught.
Am I a child of something unspeakable? Am I a child of someone who is helping her husband? You know, is that what he was thinking? I don't know.
Children play around another table. Lights sparkle and flash on the fronts of buildings. The lights go out of focus and become a fountain of golden water. A large red target. Repeating patterns of windows. Lights flicker mesmerically. Mike.
I used to dream that there was a door in the back of a closet, and I would work my way through, and there would be this hall out of Beauty and the Beast, this fantastic hall. It was finding something where there was nothing. And finding something dramatically different. When I found out about my father, this was that something different.
Light reflects on a building's shiny surface. Either side of a waterfall is frozen with large icicles. Jonathan Stensland stares down at the ground.
I think it would be a mistake to presume that by having the facts, you have the truth. It's never the whole truth. I did sense that there was a little bit of a pleasure of pulling it off. Like, there we are. These kind of like, you know, forbidden fruits shouldn't even exist.
Water drips off the icicles.
And somehow he's the reason that we exist.
From afar, John stands alone by a small river. He turns and begins to walk. Sunset, Wendy drives her car. She pulls to the side of the road from where there is a view of golden blue sky over rolling hills. She stands with her hand on the open door and looks out.
He's propagated himself forever through me and my family.
She looks across at Las Vegas in the distance.
It's like a chain reaction that I can't really stop.
Home video footage of Wendy in bed cradling a newborn. Cut to another woman holding the baby. The camera zooms in on the baby's features. Wendy, as a new mom, runs her hands through her hair. In present day, Wendy smooths her hair.
Did you think you knew better than my mom and dad? Why did you decide, you know, that them having a child was worth deceiving them? And, you know, did you think you were better than them? Or, you know, what? Why? Why? And I don't think I have that answer.
She purses her quivering lips and frowns. Her eyes glisten in the sunset. Quincy Fortier Jr. sits up in his chair. He nods and purses his lips, staring off. He looks down. Mike Otis blinks behind his glasses and looks away. Standing beside a road, John smokes a cigarette. Brad Golko's blue eyes shift behind his glasses. Wendy's hand is down by her side. She wears a silver wedding ring highlighted by the sunset. The landmarks of Las Vegas are visible through a purple haze. Text appears. As of this film's completion, more than 24 U.S. doctors have been accused of secretly inseminating patients with their own sperm. Dr. Quincy Fortier saw thousands of fertility patients. His biological children continue to emerge. Slow fade to black. Credits roll. A film by Hannah Olson. Interlocked fingers move nervously. A man smiles and looks from side to side. Joseph Lords, born 1982. Music supervisor, Caleb Townsend. An old woman smiles. Karen Clark, born 1948. Investigator Ann Diebel, QRI. A man turns to the camera and blinks. Joshua Teal, born 1979. Line producer, Christina Gonzalez. A woman smiles resolutely. Desiree Young, born 1986. Associate editor, Mike Wallace. A man looks into the camera with his mouth slightly open. Michael Cleaver, born 1984. Associate producer, Sarah Keeling. A man smiles resolutely. Brent Levitt, born 1984. Credits continue. Dwight Gotis Smiles Nervously, born 1949. Jonathan Stensland Fixes His Eyes on the Camera, born 1965. Brad Gulko Looks Off to One Side Expressionlessly, born 1966. Wendy Babst Blinks, Her Head Tilted to One Side, born 1966. Doesn't count as a job well done. The locust had their day, the suckers pay and pay. Carmen Stern would probably pull that trigger for fun. And in the hills where all the sunshine, constant companions, constant companions. Close enough.
Filtered over the transom that a villain ended up with a part. You paid your respects like a ransom to a moment that was doomed from the start. Life is good, you look around and think I'm in the right neighborhood, but honey, you don't belong. Life is grand, and wouldn't you like to have it go as planned, go as planned. And in the hills where hope is sunshine, constant companion, constant companion. Close enough to almost touch the lights of the candle, the lights of the candle, the lights of the candle.
My Mom. Audio description created by Zoo Digital, written by Will Loxley, and narrated by Tansy Alexander. Gaptooth. Loki Films. HBO, a presentation of Homebox.